handed to the honourable members who are here from the select committee. Can we agree that we will quickly deal with apologies? We'll just repeat one announcement of yesterday when we deal with announcements later on, and we'll look at the minutes after we have had the presentation. We would anticipate, Deputy Minister and the team, that you would go through a presentation for about an hour, and then we use the remaining hour to engage with you in terms of questions and comments, if that's okay with you. Can we ask our secretary whether we do have any apologies?
Thank you, Chairman. We received only written apologies so far from Honorable Dihale. She's attending a meeting with the Russian ambassador, but she thinks she'll join us later.
Thank you very much. We do have the apology from the minister. As we know, the executive on Wednesdays are in the normal sitting of cabinet. And we know that cabinet is also quite busy at this time. Because I was surprised yesterday when I realized it's actually November. Mm-hmm. Honourable Faber?
Yes, Honourable Chair. I'll just quickly ask the court, speaking of November, November things can tell on your moustache as well. So that will be a good start. I see you already started your moustache at some stage in your life. But what I was going to ask now, did we get any apologies from Honourable Vara?
No.
Just slightly in accordance with the questions that was raised yesterday in the House, where they had a lot to say about things happening in meetings, but just to also say that he's not in a meeting again. Him and Honourable Fana Mukwena. He is? Okay. I retract the last one.
In Afrikaans, on Straat van D. Honourable Mukwena, welcome. If you wouldn't mind sitting here with the members, are sitting, please. Can I... Also, on that point that you're raising, Honourable Faber, say that today, this month, is also Disability Month. Okay. And I am impressed at the progress that we are making, but worried about how much progress we have made in dealing on people with disabilities. It will come through in one of the questions that I have for the Department of Tourism as well. But let us then, that being said, immediately head over to the DG. I don't know whether you or the Deputy Minister. Deputy Minister, sir. The Deputy Minister will lead us in the presentation. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members, the team of the National Department of Tourism. Let me take this opportunity to thank the opportunity presented to the National Department of Tourism to present its annual report before the Select Committee here today. The presentation will be led by the Director General. May I also take this opportunity to formally present our new Director General before the Select Committee, Mr. Rick Katarasa. He will be leading the team in the presentation. If I may just take a moment, Chair, to introduce the presentation as will be made. I wish to start from the fact that from the onset and wish to present before the Select Committee that we have achieved an unqualified audit report. We have achieved 85% of our performance targets in the financial year. And our vacancy rate is at 6% as measured against 8% target across government. And we also are boasting that in terms of women empowerment, we have achieved 53% of women representation in the department. And at the same time, we also wish to highlight in front of you our approach in the empowerment of people with disability in line with the Disability Month as well. That whereas the national target is at 2%, we imposed on ourselves a target of 5%, and at the moment we are at 5.3%. And our department is one of the top 5 departments in terms of good governance, as rated for the Management Performance Assessment Tool administered by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. We always see feedback from the Auditor General and from the honorable members in a constructive way, and always take into account all aspects that are brought to our attention so that we can ensure continuous improvement in the delivery of our services. We also now are pleased with the latest developments where the Cabinet has approved the recommendations of the Interministerial Committee that places Bekki tourism on its good footing to move forward to continue to be one of those sectors that contributes into the GDP and would create the much needed jobs. And the fact that in the deliberations and the and such approvals, we ultimately found the balance between the security and economic interests of the country. And we believe that the implementation, therefore, will put its origin into its proper growth path. Through our tourism, through the ECHADA Council, we have also been able to conclude the tourism codes of good practice and are likely to be a first sector to align sector codes with the new generic codes of good practice. We take this as a big step in transformation of our sector, and lastly, to pride ourselves in the manner in which we have made a direct impact in the lives of ordinary South Africans. Just yesterday, I was in the rural part of KwaZulu-Natal for a graduation of young people. In total, KwaZulu-Natal is about 900 young people that are graduating as tourism bodies. So across those fields that we have identified, we have managed to change the lives of ordinary South Africans, and through our expanded public works program, we continue to create jobs and also bring tourism amenities to previously marginalized communities. And also, we have been supporting small and medium enterprises in partnership with our tourism enterprise partnership. I will then, Chair, if you allow, the DG to lead us in terms of the actual presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Person. What we have, We've got a whole team here, which will do different components of the presentation, leading their respective programs. Rafa Gatman is our Chief Financial Officer. He's going to take us through the outcome of the audit report, and also take us through the financials. Namadison Kisitwala will take us through Program 1 overall in terms of the performance itself. Bella Silulwane will take us through Program 2, Quality and Knowledge Services. Memorunga will take us through the domestic tourism program. And Ms. Arimi Malan will take us through the international program. I will add where they would have not necessarily captured all the things that we needed to actually disclose to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and to our members. From what the Deputy Minister already said, is the Department received an unqualified audit report. However, we had one matter of emphasis that was raised. The National Treasury has given the Department exemption from applying the modified cash standard in respect of the infrastructure development programs. The problem that the Department experienced actually came already from the previous financial year. The modified cash standard has changed, and the Department did not get any guidance from the Office of the Accountant General on the classification of the expanded public works projects. In the 14-15 financial year, on the 28th of May, one day before we had to submit our statement, the National Treasury came and they gave us a clean exemption. But this time they gave us an exemption on the infrastructure projects and not on the training projects. So what the department then had to do, because we had to submit our financial statements on the next day, the 29th of May, because that was the Friday, and the request, because it fell on the weekend, we had to submit to the National Treasury and order to deliver on the 29th. So within a matter of 24 hours, we had to reclassify all our training projects to goods and services. In the past, it was always classified as transfer funding. Now, when we did the classification to goods and services, obviously the amounts that has been committed for the next year, when the latter amount was not included in our financial statements, so that has been regarded then as a material misstatement because it was an amount of 82 million rand. Be it as may, the previous year it was also there, but we were not sure at that stage, and our time for submission was so short that we then took a decision not to include it in the statement, and obviously that was a wrong decision, although the information was available. You will see that this matter that is raised also then has an impact on our financial statement, and then also it relates to the compliance of laws and regulations. So that's just to give you a clarification up front of the matter that was raised. You will also see that on the next slide. On the internal controls, it also says that the internal controls ensure that the annual financial statements include the commitments to close in that in respect of TWP training projects were not effective. On the consultants, we had no findings. On fraud, there's no matters. And then other reports, that is our forensic investigations that was still underway. On our financial information, if we look at our budget, you will see that administration has spent 97.7%, policy and knowledge services 100%, international tourism management 99.8%, and domestic tourism 94.7%. In total, the department has spent 98.4% of its budget. If you take the spending per program, this will give you an indication where the spending lies. Program 1, administration, is 14%. Program 2, policy and knowledge services, is 60%. The reason why it is big is because the transfer payment to SA Tourism is included in policy and knowledge services. And then international tourism, 3%. And then domestic tourism, which includes expanded public works projects, is 23%. If you look at our expenditure of variances, current payments, 6.8 million, transfer payments, 8.8 million, and then capital, zero. Total, this one, variance, 25.6. Just to give you an indication that you will see that under transfers, it's under households, 18.7 million. That relates to the expanded public works projects. It is our tourism, our EPWP incentive project, where the money is lying with the Department of Public Works, and we can only request the drawdowns once it has been approved by the Department of Public Works. If you look at the expenditure on economical classifications. Current expenditure is 30%, and then our transfer is 69%, and then our capital assets is 1%. On the next one, it's just the variance that is explained there, and I've already explained the households one, where the biggest amount is 18.7 million, and then total 25.6.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I will then move straight to the presentation for Program 1 Issues Administration. Thanks to the strategic objective, which is to provide effective organizational performance management system, we have been able to achieve the targets as shown on the slide today. The quarterly reports on the implementation strategic plan and annual performance plan have been delivered as targeted. We have reviewed the strategic plan and the AGP for 2015-2016. There's one deviation concerning the effective organizational performance management system, just one. On the basis that we had targeted 4 quarterly risk mitigation reports to be analyzed and submitted to the Risk Management Committee. However, 3 quarterly reports were analyzed and submitted. This was just a matter of the diary. The Risk Management Committee meeting happened after the close of the financial year. So the 4th quarterly risk mitigation report was submitted on Monday, the 31st of March. For the period under review. The NDC focus and criminal coordination and support system was reviewed and implemented as planned. There were 4 SAT oversight reports that were prepared. The strategic objective under the provision of corporate legal support has been fully achieved in that the litigation protocol has been complied with. These are instruments that assist the department in terms of making sure that corporate legal support is provided on time and that it is of quality. The service delivery charter also relates to the management of contracts and the management of tourist complaints that we receive, that they are dealt with on time. We have complied 100% with these instruments, the legislative program as well. All legislation was drafted in accordance with the program that we had set up for ourselves. Tourist complaints, we use the service delivery charter to measure our compliance with the time frame in terms of referring them to appropriate authorities for resolution. We have managed to achieve 100% of compliance with the instruments that we have set out to comply with. A small deviation on vacancy rate, as at the 31st of March, we had targeted the maximum vacancy rate to be at 8%, but with the resolution, as at the end of the 1 March 2015, we were sitting at 6%.
Just say, it's actually a good thing. It means you have no, you have low numbers of vacancies.
Yes. Thank you. On the percentage representation of designated groups, the Deputy Minister had alluded in the opening remarks that we are doing very well in terms of the rate of people with a disability. We have exceeded our target. We have targeted 5%. We have at the end of the financial year, we're sitting at 5.3. We had also exceeded the women representation in that we had targeted 50%, but we were sitting at 53%. The black representation as well, we were sitting at 95.1 compared to the 91% target that we had. The 100% compliance with the performance management development system within the department that relates to the indicators where the percentage implementation of workplace plan is concerned, and the percentage compliance on management of labor relations cases in line with the script. We are recording 100% today. There were four employee health and wellness programs that we were to facilitate. We managed to achieve the four programs. With regards to the provision and maintenance measures to protect people, property, and information, we targeted four security threats and risk assessments. We had managed to conduct four security threats and risk assessments. ICT, we had targeted 95% uptime on all ICT services and a maximum of 3% service time. We had maintained 98.75% uptime on all ICT services and a maximum of 1.25% service time. The 2014-2018 ICT SP was developed as targeted relating to the development of ICT strategic plan. That is the abbreviation for the ICT SP. Ensuring economic efficient and effective use of departmental resources, we have targeted the submission of four quarterly and one annual financial statement to the National Treasury and Auditor General South Africa. These have been fully achieved. We have targeted 100% of expenditure on procurement from BBBE status level of contributor 1 to 8 enterprises. This has been achieved as well. They are 100% compliant on expenditure of procurement. Regarding internal audit services, the annual internal audit plan, we have targeted 100% implementation, which we have achieved. On the implementation of the communication strategy, there is a deviation. We have targeted 100% implementation of the strategy, but however, we had managed to go up to 91% in the sense that in the strategy we had the approval of the corporate memorabilia that was to be approved. It was not approved on time, so we are sending the deviation of 9% on the target of 100%. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. Okay. Good morning, and colleagues. I'm presenting Program 2, which is Policy and Knowledge Services. Under Policy and Knowledge Services, we achieved approximately 87%, and only two targets we have not achieved would translate to 13% of those. We had a number of initiatives that we aim for local governments. Support under our strategic objective to develop, implement, and update tourism policies, strategies, programs, and plans. Two initiatives we earmarked for local government, which is the capacity building for tourism practitioners and policymakers at local government as well as the local government conference, which we both achieved. In addition to that, we had one annual tourism guidance report that had to develop that gives us a comprehensive status of the tourist guiding sector that then was in recognizing that there is a tourist guiding legislation in place, and therefore we had to make sure that we check how are they implementing legislation, which we also managed to achieve. Under our strategic objective to promote responsible tourism best practices, We had one target, which was to develop a report and an implementation plan for the universal accessibility in provincial parks, and we managed to achieve the target. Under our strategic objective to monitor and evaluate tourism sector performance strategies, policies and initiatives, we set two reports under monitoring and also two reports under evaluation. The first report of monitoring was the 2013 State of Tourism Report that we had developed, which we managed to develop and finalize. And then the second one was the 2013-14 National Tourism Sector Strategy Implementation Report, which we also managed to achieve. Under evaluation, we had to evaluate two projects, which is the Chef Training Program as well as the Tourism Sustainability Coastline Settlement, which we both managed to evaluate, and we had to develop the reports, which we managed to do that. Under our strategic objective to provide research and knowledge management services to inform policy and decision making, we had targeted two systems to be developed in the previous financial year. One being the visitor information on extended database tool, and then the second one was the tourist guiding central database, which we both managed to develop. In addition, we implemented the national visitor information framework by developing visitor information standard national directory and operational guidelines, and we managed to also achieve that. Still under the same strategic objective to provide research and knowledge management system to inform policy and decision making, we earmarked two targets, which is to develop and maintain two national tourism information gateways, which are two NTIGs. We wanted to test two sites, one airport and one land border. We managed to achieve the one at the OR Tambo International Airport, which is the airport National Tourism Information Gateway. But we experienced challenges when we had to implement the land border port at Bainbridge because of the challenges that Home Affairs was facing, and therefore we saw ourselves also not being able to achieve that target because of the infrastructure, the dynamics of the environment, and all that. But the intention was to test the two national tourism information gateways at two different sites so that we are able to understand the complex environment at different ports of entry within the country. We also earmarked under the same strategic objective to provide research and knowledge management services to inform policy and decision making. We earmarked six research studies with universities, and we managed to achieve the target where we were able to develop five research reports with five institutions. But one research study that we conducted with the University of Zululand was not completed. Though we had put a proper process in place to develop the proposal, to take the proposal to a peer review panel of experts, and also to monitor the project. At the end, they could not achieve because they were faced with leadership challenges at an institution, and some of those leadership challenges were in the research management unit. Another strategic objective to promote compliance with the tourism sector, the e-codes. We had two programs that we set the targets in the previous financial year, which is the amendment of tourism property code, which we managed to implement, as well as the feasibility assessment of creating a database of black-owned enterprises in the tourism sector. We managed to conduct this feasibility assessment, and which then we managed to achieve at the end of the financial year. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Amelia. Gigi Darahe, you say you mustn't push your staff like that because then they're going to start touring. real business sense. We appreciate that. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'll take you through Program 3, International Tourism Management. just to highlight that on slide 13, the branch or the program managed to achieve 91% of its targets, with 1.9% not fully achieved, just partially achieved. Moving straight to our strategic objectives, our first strategic objective is to provide international tourism market analysis to inform strategic interventions. The first BPI speaks to number of response plans on markets per year, but what it does is we look at potential opportunities for market penetration in the world. We had three targets here. The first one looked at the potential benefits of sports tourism, which we fully achieved. What we do there is just for the department to look at potential opportunities. Number two, we looked at a policy directive to expand our market penetration in the North Americas, which we then also fully achieved. And number three, we looked at strategic political interventions in a number of areas. One was in the Nordic region, the five countries that makes up the Nordic region, but as a region, Russia, Indonesia, and then the GCC region, which is almost the Middle East region. We managed to achieve all of that apart from the strategic intervention in the Nordic region. And the reason behind that is that we selected a platform for the intervention, and upon further analysis of our selection, we realized that we would not fully achieve our strategic intent in that selected platform. So we made the decision not to go ahead, but to include it in the current year's annual performance plan. Our second BPI looks at the ways that we support and institutionalize tourism in our South African missions abroad. There's two targets for us. One is where we make sure that there's provision of marketing collateral to all the missions. And we also now do it in different languages, not only English. And our second target speaks to the economic diplomacy training, where for the last 2 or 3 years, tourism is seen as a key pillar of economic diplomacy. So we are part of the capacity building on tourism in the economic diplomacy training. The next strategic, and just to say that we achieved those two targets. The next strategic objective speaks to reduce barriers to tourism growth to enhance our tourism competitiveness. So that is our key to enhance the competitiveness of the sector. And our first target there speaks to quality direction on segmented tourism markets. What it means is that we looked at segmented market, South African tourism segmented markets, and we looked at a process that can serve as an early warning system of issues that come up, whether it's visa issues or airlift issues, to ensure that we react proactively and not reactively. The next initiative with regard to enhancing our competitiveness speaks to the potential. We looked at the potential in positioning South Africa as an aviation hub for the Southern Corridor as an option to enhance our tourism competitiveness. So that we also then achieved. Our next strategic objective, you look at bilateral and multilateral engagement and how we utilize those to advance our national, regional, Africa, and global agenda. We had two national priorities that we facilitated there. One speaks to regional integration and the other one to training. With regard to regional integration, what we do is on an annual basis, we have a capacity building workshop for all African countries, especially those that we sign bilateral agreements with. And during the capacity building workshop, we attend to the area that we agreed to in the memorandums of agreement with regard to capacity building. We realize that in Africa, the requests are fairly similar, So we do it in one platform. Usually it's like a workshop for 3 to 4 days. The next priority that we target that we look at is to look at the ministerial session that forms part of Indaba. This was the second ministerial session that took place, and we looked at the first two and at options of improving on that initiative. With regard to training, we started with we developed a policy framework for international placement for skills development. What that speaks to is we get through our multilateral and bilateral agreements many opportunities for skills development, whether it's departmental staff or sector staff. And we don't want to do it just ad hoc, but make sure that there is really demand for those candidates, and also that, you know, they are protected when they abroad. The next PPI look at the national priorities that we drive through our multilateral engagement, and there's one national priority that we facilitated there, and that is regional integration, and that is the work that we do through RESALSA, SADC, and the African Union in advancing South Africa's policy position on tourism through the region and the continent. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm tempted to share, Honourable Faba, what has happened there when the laughing was going on, but I will resist. They will tell you privately. please, madam, proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm going to present on domestic tourism management. The strategic objective was to implement tourism growth and development strategies in order to increase tourism contribution to inclusive economic growth. We had an indicator here where we were targeting 4 national programs coming out of our domestic tourism growth strategy. The first one being the National Tourism Career Expo, which was hosted by Eastern Cape from 2012 to 2014. And the main aim is to encourage the young people to look at tourism as a career of choice, promoting the industry as an employer of choice, stimulating innovation within our young people, and at the same time inculcating the culture of travel among our young people. It was the third and last year for Eastern Cape to host the Career Expo. We also had 9 educator seminars which were held in 9 provinces, which is a partnership between us and Fed Harbor in order to expose our teachers on tourism-related issues, where they choose the subject in terms of what information they need to be provided with. The third one was the normal annual tourism month, which was hosted by Northern Cape last year. The theme was tourism and community development. What we did was to come up with our own thing called Tourism Transforming Life. It was held at Haxian Fund, which is going to be the venue for the Big Car 2016. The fourth one was on service excellence, which is the strategy that we have developed in 2012. We're implementing it now. We did what we call Journey to Service Excellence, piloting it at Upington, mainly where we're saying the public needs to be brought together and understand that they're providing service, and this really served very well because we had frontliners within our retail stores, staff was part of it, the airport, everybody rallied around that. We also had to come up with a self-assessment tool for our industry, so that they are able to assess their service level and see where they can improve themselves. The next was on the number of projects implemented from the approved tourism development strategy. action plan for the development of support packages for our provinces. The first one was on capacity building, where we host a capacity building workshop within our poverty notes. We started first with three areas in Kenya, Bute, Bembe, as well as Bushbuck Ridge. We have added so far, we have come up with Maluti development route municipalities along the route, as well as Dr. Ruth Mombati in Northwest, and Dukabi, and most of those municipalities where we feel they need to be capacitated in terms of understanding what is tourism all about. The type group are our traditional leaders, our municipal officials, as well as the business. The second one, oldest one, was the implementation of tourism interpretation signage in four World Heritage sites. We managed to do five. We couldn't deal with the fourth one, which is Barrian Slough, because there was a problem in terms of the tender issues they had to re-advertise. But the main problem in terms of the deviation was the target was not correctly formulated. We said we were going to implement, whereas it's not our base to implement. What we did was to transfer money for them to be able to come up with those signage within the area establishment. The other one was on the incentive program implementation. By the time we were at the last of the month, that is March, we were not ready to implement the deviation that we had, because we should have done the call for application as well as adjudicating on those so that we can award. This was not achieved. In terms of enterprise development, this is the partnership that we have with TEP. We, on the rural enterprises, we had a target of 489 and were less by 23. On the enterprises supported to grow, we had one overachieved. On number of businesses supported with market access, we exceeded the target by, with 168. And in terms of supporting the historically disadvantaged enterprises, we're able to overachieve by 100. On the enterprise trained, in terms of customer service toolkit and business skills, we also overachieved by 228. On supporting enterprises for them to be able to come up with the jobs, we were also able to exceed by 226. On the EPWP, the full-time equivalent, jobs that we were supposed to create were 4,369, we were less by 1,332. And this mainly because we had reduced the labor intensity. Instead of it being 35, we ran between 20 and 25. And we were not able to get full-time equivalent, but in terms of buying material for us to come up with the construction, we were able to deal with that. The other area, it was that there was a reduced budget of 40 million during that time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Abu Chairperson. Just to sometimes in the field that we're doing the things we omit certain specifics that might be in there. For members to be able to follow the reports adequately. One of the things that we will do, where we are talking about report, about this report, about that, there's a tourism report, a report on how EVs can work and so on. We'll make those reports available. But it actually, when one goes through those reports, that's when one can truly appreciate what the value of those reports is. So we'll make sure that those are actually provided. The other area that I also wanted to provide additional clarity is with regards to the border post and bait bridge.
the gateway that we wanted to create. There were changes in terms of the flow of activities as they are migrating towards the BMA and so on, which necessitated that the spot that we would have used originally had to be moved to another place. But the place where we were going to move to did not make economic sense to actually proceed with that particular spot, because it would have been after people have been cleared completely, and as they are going, then we would have to stop over at some point. And there was nothing else in that area that we would stop for, except for that specific information. And we were saying there would also be issues of security and so on, in terms of people that would be working there when it's late and such kind of things. So that really was the main reason why we felt it would actually not make economic sense to actually still do it in the manner that we had originally envisaged. The issues about these studies we talk about, we are doing studies with this university and that university. Also, I thought it would be important that we share what are these studies, what are we talking about exactly. With the University of Johannesburg, as an example, we did a study on service excellence, but the purpose of which was to develop a module that could actually be used to train people in the industry on service excellence. And also a model that will assist companies in terms of doing a basic assessment in terms of better understanding of whether they are actually at that level of excellence or there is more that still needs to be done. So these things are done with the intent to actually in future be able to improve certain areas of that work. Here at the Cape and as the University of Technology, what we did with them was to develop a tool that assists in terms of measuring the impact of mega events. The first step that they're actually going to do now when they're fully concluded is the Forestry Congress, which took place in Devon this year. So those are the kind of things. So there is a lot of knowledge production that is actually taking place, but it's knowledge with a purpose which must actually then translate into what then do we put on the ground. The issue about you would find that through our international program, there are instances where we say we've done some work that relates to South Africa as a hub in terms of aviation, or we've done some work that relates to possibility of e-visas and so on. That is not to say that as the Department of Tourism, we are defining the policy position in terms of that particular mandate. It remains the mandate of the particular department. But these tools, they assist us in engaging and presenting the needs of tourism when such policy instruments are being developed. And that's why we actually do all these type of pieces of work. I thought that would be necessary because in some instances it may be construed to be saying, are we then developing this? The main issue that I would like to touch on Honorable Chairperson is the issue of the forensic investigations that were conducted. At the time when we concluded the annual report, these were not yet concluded. Subsequently, we have concluded we did 13 investigations. And out of those, broadly, there are three findings that are coming out of this. The first one being that there are instances where the implementer did not necessarily follow the agreement as it was concluded in terms of the overall agreement for the implementation of the project, either deliberately or because of the circumstances. Some of these circumstances would be when an immediate decision is required on site and the person decides to actually then move on with that particular decision without firstly having to consult and say these are things that I need to change and so on and so forth. There are instances where we have been provided with information which, when verified, suggests that it was actually not factually correct. So those are cases that we have actually taken to police. We have obviously police cases. We are dealing with these matters. we probably will be able to provide much more detailed report in terms of some of the cases that are now already at an advanced stage. They've gone through prosecution and so on, and we will be able to at least report in terms of whether we are getting a conviction, whether we are recovering some of the money and so on and so forth. So that's where we are at. Other things related to essentially adhering to certain assistance. The projects that we are doing, they are capital intensive, but the methodology we are using is labor intensive. So to be able to get that balance is what we have now got to do. What we did was to get both Public Works and Treasury to look at how best to deal with this balance. And in our case, whereas the overall EPWP, you're talking about 30 to 40% would then go into wages and contract management and so on. But they have agreed with us that in cases of the kind of projects that we're doing, particularly with building lodges and so on and so forth, it would be appropriate for us to actually then consider a 20% labor and the 80% then can go into a capital. With the understanding that these projects post the construction, they're actually going to have tenant jobs in there and some economic spin-offs within that particular environment. So that was one of the control measures that we eventually brought in. Some of the projects were conceptualized way back when we were still one department, it's Environmental Affairs and Tourism. And those that had some questions and we had some of these forensic investigations, at one point we were not able to actually proceed with each of those projects. We had to conclude this process and go back to those things. But one of the things, the lesson out of this is that as you implement through the labor-intensive methodology, it takes much longer time to actually construct and complete. The building that probably would have taken 6 months to complete might actually take a year and a half or even more. But as that is happening, there is changes that are actually also happening in terms of the costing and so on, bills of quantities with regards to the construction environment, new knocks are coming in and so on. So one project finds itself in different stages implemented across different knocks that are applied at different times and so on. And that has an impact in terms of the cost. And every time you go back, you get the money, you put it back into the project, you've got to have the proportional money that will deal with the labor. So that we have also taken care of through the arrangement that I was talking about from Treasury and the DPW. But Chairperson, we will keep you posted with regards to the development around the cases that we actually dealing with. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
As you were doing your presentation, just while our members are getting ready with their questions, to say that if one look at 96-97, and the amount of data that we had available vis-a-vis the tourism industry in South Africa, and compare that with the number of reports that you are presently doing, I think there was a huge gap that you are filling there. So we welcome the fact that you are not just doing the work, but also make sure that you are enabling those interested in the industry to be able to have some verified, credible data that they can then use to make sure that we grow the industry with responsibility and speed. Can we agree, colleagues? It seems like we'll have to make it a rule now that we take the three questions and then we'll take it in groups of three as well, which means that every member is entitled to raise three questions, and then we'll take three members, give the department an opportunity to respond and take another group of three. I notice Honourable Father, Honourable Mokwena, and Honourable Mchimunya in their sequence. Honourable Father is from Northern Cape. Honourable Mchimunya is from Mpumalanga, and Honorable Mokwena is from the Free State. We noticed particularly when you were talking about domestic tourism, you were giving us some of the activities that you were doing at local level that affects the provinces. and we come from provinces, and therefore I'm introducing the members so that you get an idea. That's why they're speaking only on behalf of the province. They also have national interests. Honourable Father, please.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not going to keep the department here long today. I just got one on domestic and one on international tourism. On domestic tourism, I would like to know on this EWP jobs, which we were talking about, Mr. Minister, on the 30% would be spent on EWP jobs. My question is, a lot of these EWP jobs are of short term. And my question that I want to raise, isn't it better? I know it puts food on the table on short term, but isn't it better rather breaking that up perhaps in the education part as well? Because you don't really get experts in an EPWP project on these type of projects. As I know that a lot of these EPWP projects, they have failed and they were non-operational. So my question is, and after these EPWP jobs then for these people, they go and sit on the slip again. So I would like to know, can you not incorporate a type of a long-term training in tourism so that these people will be qualified and not just have a short certificate, for instance? Because I think this is what happens. People get the short certificate and it doesn't really create a job opportunity later on, maybe in a type of apprenticeship or something. Then the second was, I just want to make a comment, and that was on the visa regulations on international tourism. I think that you've done well on that so far, but I also understand, obviously, because of this visa regulations, you've lost millions. But my question is now, do you have a plan in place to really create awareness of the new regulations overseas? Because as I said to the minister in the questions, oral questions as well, that, you know, it's to break something down like the Twin Towers, it's in a few minutes, but to build it up again takes years. And this is what my concern is at the moment. A lot of tour operators, we've broken down by saying A, B, C, D is new requirements, and they've got new markets. What plans do you really have in action to get those operators back and to actually extend tourism in the outside world to South Africa? And that's all for today. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairman. Very Honourable Mokoena was next.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, excellent report. I just thought that the... we were focusing a lot on the administrative issues of what you have done, and you seem to be meeting targets, you seem to be complying, so on and so forth. But what we're not getting is a sense of the impact that it's having on people's lives. I think we had a bit of that in the last presentation on local tourism, and I think the Deputy Minister also touched a bit on that. But you know, on the ground, what we are hearing are people complaining, for instance, in the rural areas, in the Free State, in northern Limpopo, where I've been, where people still feel excluded from the tourism sector. So, for instance, in the last presentation, thank you very much. In the last presentation, we talked about an expo, and I would have liked to hear what the impact of that expo was, for instance, how many people were touched in what areas, and how it's going to improve either their personal lives or their business lives. That's the one fact. The other issue, the DG, you touched on your collaborations with institutions of higher learning and developing the some kind of strategic plan with them and bringing a report from that. I'm just hoping that we're not relegating the educational space into those institutions of higher learning, because as we know, they're becoming more expensive and more inaccessible to our people. So it would help if we take it more directly to the people that education. And then another issue which I think Honorable Father kind of touched on is because it seems to me, because there was a presentation earlier on sports tourism. And I know, for instance, that you use a lot of art and culture in tourism. There must be relations between international relations and your department. Home Affairs, for instance, as Honorable Father touched on. So is there a formal interdepartmental structure that you have formulated to help these communications so that there's one voice on issues touching on all departments? Because that's kind of what seems to lack in most departments, where is interdepartmental relations, but we don't have a formal structure in which would help us with our strategic plan and all sorts of things as well that could affect everybody. So yeah, those are my three steps.
Thank you, Mapena. One of them, Jimmy.
Thanks for another question. One of my questions is kind of very close to what Honorable Mkwena has raised. I have to appreciate that the DC has, in his own ways, committed to availing detailed reports around a number of issues, where perhaps figures around the issues of BEE, how many that companies are creating in this particular sector, and how many jobs are being created, and how far do we go in terms of meeting the objectives of the National Development Plan of the country. I think the report will go that one. You will find my ignorance. I have not gone through this report that you have circulated now. I want to believe perhaps it kind of touch off on those issues. But again, Chairperson, my first question, your September tourism month, Mahuchona, you encourage domestic tourism, but at the same time, I would love to know the content of that particular program in as far as igniting interest of the young ones, especially school-going ones, to go into this direction of being business people or being professionals in this particular sector, if the program touches on that particular element of igniting interest. The other part I want to touch on is also around the issues of arts and cultural heritage, the beneficiation of that of it. My African people's culture is very rich. It's very rich, you and me will agree. But the beneficiation part of it, I've been to Switzerland recently, I've seen my own Ndebele arts there. I ask myself if my own Ndebele mother or sister have benefited really in terms of that part of art, cultural war art that is sold on international stage. What did they benefit? I just want to know if you have some information around that. Are these people really benefiting out of that which they do as cultural products, but which have got impact or have got some kind of direct or indirect impact on tourism, and it somehow becomes a tourism product from where I'm sitting? I may be talking as a layman, you will assist me, but I think people, cultural people who produce this product need to fully benefit out of this product that are really sold in international markets. My last point, let me stop there. My last point is around the, you give us a very good report. Sarah, if you can share with us, especially I know in your comprehensive report, the auditor's report there, but the report of the Monitoring and Evaluation Department on you, because my auntie, I'm going to tell him about it. So I think if you can assist us, I know maybe there's a confidential report between yourselves and the presidency, but maybe that question may be raised to the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation itself. But if we can really kind of get the evaluation report of this particular department and other departments by the Monitoring and Evaluation Department, over and above that which usually presented to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Lund wanted to just raise one question, so let's allow him before we take the responses from the department.
Thank you. Honorable Father is responsible for this. They covered most of it, plus the color. But the one thing that has been raised in the past as well, and didn't pick it up when we read through the report, and also didn't come up now, is the local tourism and making it affordable for South Africans to visit South African sites. That I know some of the national parks we've got that, so there's a fee for South African citizen, a fee for the static, and then a fee for tourists. But I'm talking about trying to get something in place to get it done across the country for all sites. If someone wants to go to Robben Island, Table Mountain, which is the most famous one, but also going down to the smaller ones, making sure we have different prices for locals so that they can have access to everything that tourists also have.
You can tell you very much.
It's one of the best tourism.
We have wonderful tourist sites. You don't have animals in the Western Cape, but you have a sea that the people... You can do that in India. Colleagues, honorable members, particularly the members from the Department, National Department of Tourism, Honorable Lund, as you would have seen, in mentioning the island and Table Mountain, is from Western Cape. I, just before you answer, wanted to say, Honorable Mokwena, the question on the impact, you don't need to do more than what you're going to do on that. Don't try and give us the impact indicators now. Just, I want to see how you respond to it, but would want to say that the reason for that is that the department comes and reports to us on a regular basis. And what they then do is we have a special session where they look at the plans that they have and they come and report to us on the plans. And that's the meeting that we had the last time where they then go into the detail to give us the impact. The time that we have available for this particular session is just to look at saying that these are your plans, this is your budget, this was approved, how are you doing on that? And to anticipate every detail vis-a-vis the impact in a session like this is going to be expecting too much. We don't have the time for that. Yeah, let's see how they respond.
Thank you, Honorable Jefferson. Member Roma is going to take the questions, these questions relating to where exactly, which place are we making this difference? Who are these people? Briefly. I will deal with a few of the questions. And let me may come in with regard to some of the international related things. And we are going to leave the discuss one for the 30 minutes in terms of the political related matters. okay.
Thank you, sir. The impact in terms of improving on people's lives. I'll start first with the NTCE1. We did an analysis last year comparing the 3 years that it was held in KZN as well as the 2 years when it was held in Eastern Cape. The numbers in terms of the learners coming there increase, which shows it's really something that is appealing to them. The school as well, the numbers increased. We had a 26% increase between 2008 and 2012. In terms of the schools coming there, we have a 22% increase. What I need to also indicate is that roughly the eight provinces, housing doesn't
send their learners to this career expo. But their educators do attend on their own because they see value in attending these things. In terms of SMMEs, I'll roughly indicate that we have contracted staff to help during the 3 days. We have volunteers mainly coming from university whom are giving a stipend. Transportation of the learners also is an area where our SMMEs benefit. Catering as well. Accommodation for learners, the accommodation establishment around that area for the next 3 years. They know come September they will be receiving learners from the various provinces to come in and visit there. And as well as to contract the company to register this learners, because I just indicated the figures. In 2012 alone, we had 93,254 learners coming over the 3 days. The money that is here, although this is our own internal analysis for the SMMEs, is close to 6.5 million that went into the hands of our SMMEs. Besides the teachers now being able to meet with other teachers from other provinces in terms of the educating the subject, it's also something that we cannot measure now, but know the interaction will really help them to uplift themselves. The other area, there is a competition that we normally do. Photography, they'll tell us about their place, which in a way ignites, that's the way that the honorable use, ignites interest for other people to want to go to Northern Cape. I remember 1 year, these learners were talking about NABA, and I didn't know what is this NABA. They even wanted to go to Paris to present it there. Type of food in the Northern Cape. For all of us who will be there, you are able to want to know what has happened here. There was a girl from Limpopo who spoke about a tree that talks. And normally we say, can't be. And last year, there was, in 2014, there was a girl from Eastern Cape who spoke about the street in East London, Oxford Street. And out of that meeting, wanted to go and see the Oxford Street. What is it all about? So the poetry, all the things come out of these young people. That would be the impact. At the same time, I'll go to the tourism month. Because we align ourselves to the UN WTO on these things, but we try to bring it down to our level. In 2012, the wrong community as I've indicated. In 2013, there's a billion tourists for billion opportunities. We had a sub-theme on a million opportunities a short left away. And what I liked about the Northern Cape, in terms of catering that day, which was more than thousands of people were there, they were able to say, community members, come and prepare whatever. They gave us coupons. So we went to buy the food from whoever who was coming from the community, and later on they were given money. So it wasn't a particular company catering for all of us. It was a question of, if you are interested in catering, bring whatever that you have. People will choose from you. So for us, that's the impact that will be done really on that day. But we need to improve on it. We need not have it as September month, tourism month. Throughout the year, we need to come up with activities that we need to do to culminate into this national one. This year we had it in Limpopo, and the activities are also around. Normally we have a public lecture where the universities take up on this and run with it. We have a minister's breakfast where he meets with the industry to talk about issues related to what are the challenges or the good things that are happening within the industry. On the EPWP training issue, maybe I forgot to indicate that we have two parts. The non-accredited training, which happens during the construction phase, the bricklaying, the cement, what was. Basically, the question of once you're done with this project, you can be taught by anybody in the community. So it's a skill that you must use post the construction. Then you have accredited training, which is related to the chef, wine appreciation,
the tourism bodies, as the DM was saying, these are the trainees that are accredited by CAPSIGA. Once they're done, they are employable. Or they can even come up with restaurants. We have some of those who now are employers. They are not only with two certificators to work for somebody else. So these are some of the impacts that I think we're not good to indicate that this is what is happening coming out of our various programs that we are running.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I will respond to the question from Honourable Faber on the visa regulations and how we roll it out. As per the briefing or the outcomes of the IC on the immigration regulations, there are three, I would say, periods in which the rollout will happen. Some of the recommendations will be done within the next 3 months. Some of them will be done between 3 months and a year, and others are for more than a year. The 3 months starts in November, December, January. In terms of communication, the first briefing was even before the press conference on that Friday with the sector, which included the airlines, it included the Tourism Business Council, and it included South African Tourism. So we were all briefed on the outcomes of the INC. What needs to happen now in terms of the implementation of the outcomes is the change of the regulations. So the Department of Home Affairs is driving that process, because before we can implement some of the recommendations, the regulations must first be changed. There's continued communication. There is a meeting also scheduled in the next 2 weeks to follow up again on the next steps. And also then also to remember that Cabinet extended the life of the INC for the reason of if they are heard of in the implementation, so that we can also look at those. So, yeah, we are very optimistic in terms of the implementation of these regulations. In some of these changes, in some of the action points, there's a key role for tourism. For example, in the accredited tour operator program, we need to identify those two operators that can be accredited and so forth. So we are working closely with the team. Thank you.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Member, some of the key issues with regard to how do we get the information about what real change is taking place. I think at core of it is a question of we need to drive this communications campaign that actually lifts those issues. There has been a lot. I mean, in addition to some of the things that Osmo was mentioning, we've been opening lodges that are really, really good lodges. Places where we slept and I'm still going to go back to those places. We had one in Ahakwe. There are other places like Zitabite and Mpumalanga. These are projects that we did versus Soko in Zitabite. They are real good quality. They're running efficiently, profitably. They employ people on a permanent basis. So there is this real difference that we are actually bringing about in those particular areas. But the question is, we need to up the communications as well, so that this information goes out and people know about it. The issues regarding intergovernmental related issues, we take all our policy matters through cluster process, and there is basically all departments that we need within the economic cluster are actually there. But we also participate in the international relations cluster. We also participate in the government and administration cluster. So we are able to pick up issues that require our intervention, or bring issues that require other departments' intervention. We do, however, have something we call the National Tourism Stakeholder Forum. This is the platform where the industry and mainly the CEOs and of associations and of actual businesses and groups and so on, as well as government departments, come together and we deliberate on matters around the implementation of the National Tourism Sector Strategy. And this is where we are able to identify areas that require unlocking and so on. And the government will then take these issues back into the government domain so that we are able to have that deliberation. The business would also look at areas that are applicable to them. We do this because it's got different sub-fora that deal with specific things and so on. But at least twice a year that structure meets and is supported on a quarterly basis by substructures that are actually trying to resolve some of the different challenges that we actually face. And broadly we aim of actually growing the sector. We in terms of integration of the experience that the people in the country are providing and making sure that they're visible and they're well profiled and so on. Just as an example, at the last Lizela one, the person who won the experience category in terms of the authentic nature of the type of experience that people actually get was Mama Mashangu from the village. And she really was authentic. She came there in her usual self. She always in her Ndebele regalia. She came there and she accepted the award. But the questions that were coming from people that were on the floor, they were asking, who is this lady? And that then goes to, they have to be at the place to be able to have a better appreciation of who this person is and so on and so forth. So that's part of, a broader part of the department's strategy in terms of going forward, making sure that the authentic experiences are actually part of what we are actually offering. The thing that honorable members see in the program that was run by DERCO, with Arts and Culture, which actually allowed for some of these arts and crafts to be bought directly from the people that are doing them, and that's why they are in the different places across the missions in the different countries that we've got relations with. The DPME report, we are one of the top 5 departments. There are areas that we are really doing very well, areas pertaining to strategy, areas pertaining to... I would say we probably would have been... We are currently nominated for an award in terms of these things. Whether we'll get it or not, we don't know, but we are nominated for an award. Only 5 departments are nominated for this. On the admin side, Honorable Chairperson, I would say we are fairly happy with the environment. There's good controls, there's good systems, there's good oversight. We regularly brief the political principals on those matters to make sure that they are not. But we convene our audit committee meetings and all those types of things, and we make sure that everything is in place. Previously, the areas we needed to strengthen was on IT, and we have done that subsequently, and even the AG's report says that they are now happy with that particular environment. So that's an area that we are quite happy with. The course, we will have those reports. There is a study that we did on the Black Economic Empowerment, where are we, status and so on. So that report is available. We'll share that report. We take those things. In fact, in the process of developing the new codes that are aligned with the EDEL codes, that report was the basis for us to be able to say, where are we and where are we now supposed to be? But we will also find time to actually give a detailed presentation with regards to the new codes, which can then also we can also share the details with regards to what exactly did we pick up in the previous period. There is a policy matter which relates to dual pricing. I do know that there is a number of countries that follow this strategy. But in our, because we always try as much as we can to be evidence-driven. We base whatever policy propositions we make to the political friendly funds on what is the evidence that supports that particular decision that we are proposing they should take. We have a diverse range of products in South Africa. Diverse range. It could be an experience at a zoo. If it is, for instance, in Johannesburg, it could be an experience outside the zoo at the zoo lake, which costs money. It will only cost transportation to get it. But it will be a lot of entertainment and everything. Weekends and Sundays and so on. The biggest issue that we have got to overcome is to build the culture of travel. Now, to build that culture of travel, we have got to make sure that we start with young people. And that is why we are working with Zen Parks, we're working with Art and Culture to make sure that we are able to get that person this attraction. Over and above the Zen Parks, the National Parks Week, which is a free week during 12 months. This year, Marubeni was also offering that particular opportunity. And the number of people that went there was quite a large number. And most of them, these are school-going children who have never had any exposure to that particular site whatsoever. And we are building this so that in future we know we have got this particular market. But over and above that, we also have to look at how do we make sure, and this is through South African tourism, that people are aware of what are the possibilities. There are places that one would spend 400 rand, and out of that 400 rand, four people can stay in a particular place with breakfast. Yes, with breakfast. I don't want to mention names of businesses specifically, but we'll do that. So those places exist, but do people know about them? People do not know about those things. So it's a question of us making sure that these things are actually adequately marketed and there is information about them and people know exactly what's supposed to be done. The one test we did at one stage, we say, amongst ourselves, all of us, when last did one take a domestic trip for leisure purposes? And where was that to? So when one takes that, then instantly it actually comes back to say, but these are people that know about these places. Mm-hmm. These are people that are also, they do have, they're earning decently, when one would put it in that way. But they are not necessarily traveling. So it's that's why I'm saying it's mainly about making sure that we build that kind of travel. When we look at all these statistics that are presented and so on, but one then looks at the exact things that are happening on the ground. I went to the Gold City. There's this notion that people that are coming from the neighboring countries do not necessarily bring tourism value. When you go to the Gold City on a typical weekend, the cars you see there is Botswana, is people from Zimbabwe, is Swaziland, and Basotho. And these people are coming there because that is the only theme park that we've got in Southern Africa. Probably the only biggest theme park that we've got in Africa. Now, they want to have that experience. But they're not going to leave immediately. They're going to sleep here. They're going to spend some money there, and they're also going to experience other things within that particular precinct and in the greater Johannesburg. You go to, I used this example about the incident at the Michelangelo. I was driving into the parking of the shopping center, Sandton City. Unfortunately, I found myself in the parking area of the Michelangelo. And when you're in there, you can't get up. You've got to hood and so on, and they must come and open for you. So as I was driving in, I found myself in this exclusive parking. The cars that will pass, they tend to all sorts of big, very expensive cars. It couldn't. Now, what I couldn't help noticing was that almost all the cars that were there, the number plate was not yet. Almost all, I do have this in my phone, the picture. Almost all of them were in Belgium. And these are cars that cost about 7-8 million and so on. Now, the question that I'm trying to bring is that value, that there, is what we should be going for. It is the kind of value we should make sure that it translates, it gets into the country and so on and so forth. If we're doing that, we must also make sure that those of us that can travel are aware of the opportunities and are able to actually travel. Cable Bay, as an example, is running a special now, as we speak. That is going to end sometime in July next year. And this special is about $1,000. Now, that is a five-star, and it can cost exorbitant amounts of money. But I'm trying to say, and this is what South Africans, it says in that, it says, you must bring your ID. It's not something that we do as a government policy and say, we'll let you charge this in the hotel. There's also issues of competition around that and interference from this. We don't necessarily regulate prices as much.
Thank you. I noticed before I go to you, Honourable Father, that there's two that you did not answer. Honourable Mokwena's question on the focus on institutions of higher learning, and then also Honourable Jimunia's question related thereto, which is the adverse of it, what are you doing in terms of reaching out to scholars, that means learners at high schools? Let them deal with those two, then I'll...
Sorry, Chim, mine was not a question. I just wanted to help by saying that Tanga Junction is also a theme park. It's part of South Africa.
Alpha will take the question about the learner, the curriculum related issues. I will deal with the question about the higher position.
On the learners, part of the NTPE is also to inculcate that culture of travel among our young people. They move from the various provinces, come to this province. There's an opportunity for them to be taken around as an excursion. That is within the NTPE. In terms of reaching out to scholars now, we are saying as much as we teach, we give information to educators because we have an MOU that has to assist with the accommodation side of things. We spoke with SANPAS a few weeks ago to say they have the SANPAS training center. As the educators go there, the learners must also be part of that exercise so that they are able to know their country, understand the environment, and that fashion will be building future travelers, unlike some of us. So it's an exercise that we haven't yet fully consciously worked on. The DG indicated Marubeng. Three weeks ago, we supported the school in Fani together with the municipality for them to be taken to Marubeng. Fani provided the transport part of it. We provide the catering part of it. But it's something that consciously we need to say, these are the problems that we are going to deal with. Hence, some parts we see it as a good partner. Education at the same time indicators they have close to 12 million kids that will be able to access. We need to also partner with them so that we are able to have this tripartite situation where all of us support this process, because there are instances where education is safe, don't take our children's school hours. So meaning we have to do it Friday and over the weekend. But it's something that we see, it can really start building on our future travelers.
The question on the institutions of higher learning and our partnership. Our partnership is twofold. There's an aspect that is solely aimed at knowledge production. Now, the idea there is that if you work with a particular university, I'll give you an example. If you work with a university University of Zululand, for example. And the study they are supposed to be doing is on how nature reserves, how communities in the proximity of these nature reserves can take advantage of the opportunities that exist within those nature reserves. The lessons that come out of there are no longer just applicable to the area that they started, which would have been in the Northern KZN. They can then be replicated in any other area that happens to have nature reserves, and the material conditions in and around are similar to the ones that they have actually looked at. So there is a leg that we are looking at, surely generation of knowledge that enables us to work together with provinces subsequent to the outcomes in terms of how then do we develop certain area in light of the outcome of whatever research study. The other part of it talks to capacity building. And in the capacity building, what we noted when we started was that there was limited knowledge production due to the reason that there was limited development of tourism scholars. So you didn't have people that actually have PhDs and so on that would be able to consistently go out and then start researching on particular thematic areas that can assist us in the future in terms of how do we develop further. So that area we have also looked at, and we've been working with all these five universities and trying to actually get people to develop that level of capacity. So those are the two direct engagements that we have got as a department. And when we get these products, then we are able then to use them in terms of development going forward. But the people that are actually, some of the people that are actually getting developed, they end up being academics within the same institution. Others are actually going to other institutions as well.
Thank you very much. I've noticed the two hands, but wanted to check. Let's do it this way. Let's have Honorable Bauda. Honorable Bauda is from Mpumalanga. And then we'll have Honorable Mita, who is from the Eastern Cape. Honorable Tebe, can we agree that we allow you no more than two questions? It's okay. They can take three, and then you can take two. I'm just looking at the time. We have like 15 minutes. Please, Honorable Bauda.
Thank you, Chair. I won't keep you very long. I greet all of you. Assalamu alaikum. In 2012, Honorable Chair and Director General, worldwide, $29 billion was spent on what is called halal tourism. I'm mentioning this because of the tremendous opportunity that exists here. I know that KwaZulu-Natal did have a halal tourism conference, I think either in 2013 or 2014. This figure is expected to grow by 2020 to $192 billion worldwide. If we get 1% of this, I don't believe we will have the capacity to commercialize this. There is tremendous opportunity here. I think the department should look at it in some way to encourage it. I know about this because I get people asking me very often about this. For those who don't know about halal tourism, please Google. You'll find a lot of information. Secondly, Chairperson, a point that I would like to raise is, you know, what I'm sensing from the presentation and from the discussion that we've had with this department in the past, is that we are still working very much within the socio-economic systems that exist pre-94. Credit to you, you're doing a lot and you're making a lot of effort to improve on what you've had and what is still there. But I do humbly believe that we need to think out of the box and make fundamental changes in our thinking. When you talk tourist, I much prefer the word visitor. And the reason I prefer that is because anybody that is traveling is a visitor. And a tourist somehow confines us to thinking of that person coming from a foreign country who is visiting South Africa on holiday. Now, the visitor, and Didi, you did like a good item mention or touch on this very briefly a few minutes ago when you were talking about the children, you know, and the sites locally and the local tourists. But it's a bit more than about somebody that is going as a holiday maker or for recreation purposes or for casual purposes. Every weekend, literally thousands of people in South Africa travel from their workplaces in Gauteng and so on and travel out into the rural provinces. These people are villagers. And if we improve the services and that we provide to these people, taking care of the penny helps us to take care of the pounds. Now, what I mean by this is, if we improve just one thing, for example, signage. Now, improving signage for local people already improves signage for foreign tourists coming into the country. I served for about 6 years on the tourism board in Barberton, and from the very beginning I used to say to the guys that Barberton is not a tourist destination in the sense that we are considering tourists from overseas. But yes, there are about 1,000 visitors visiting Barberton every day, and these are people who come from the surrounding areas. I said, let's target that market. Nothing was done. Today, I don't think even 200 people are coming into the town, whereas if we had done something to improve it then, this is not a unique situation to Barberton, but it is a national situation. We need to look at improving services for the local visitors that are traveling throughout this country. I'd like to see a shift in our thinking, but I would also like to see the approach of this department being a bit more all-encompassing. Shepherd, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let me just also greet everyone, Deputy Minister and the official present, and thank the department for such a good effort. But what I want to know, Chair, from the presenters of the reports first, is the issue of National Tourism Career Expo. I'd like to know if the department is still going to continue that program. I'm asking this question because it's a program that benefits, multi-pronged benefits. The young people are benefiting from it, the business, the province itself, through economy, boosting the economy of the region at that particular period of the ESCO. So I would like to know, is it still going to happen? Is it going to rotate the province so that everyone does have a feel of what it is? And the other point, it's good that the department now is focusing on local tourism. But what I would like to know from the department, the partnership that they have with community media general, because I have this feeling that the media does have an impact on the work that they are doing, the negative reporting about the country. So is there a way where you mix as both and begin to discuss the importance of selling the country? So those are the two questions that I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
See, I want to come to your rescue and just pose one question. I've been deputy minister. Religiously, I'm raising this thing that we really need to move. And the honourable Vaudau came close to. I mean, he was explicit about local tourism. I'm religiously raising this thing. There's a person of my age who resides in a nearby village next to some city, for instance. I want to use my instance because I'm from the Northwest. Of my age, who has never visited any space in some city. And if you want to talk about tourism, I don't know if the right English word is to domesticate or indigenize. But we need to find a way of making sure that our own people can be able to have access to tourism space. I want you to example my mom room. I was bred and buttered to go in a place in Northwest called Tau. Connell, a place called Tuming. It's called Small Heaven, popularly. I know you are doing a lot of work there. But what is it that you are doing to stimulate interest by people in Tau to be able to visit such? So the thing that you talk about Dr. Rusiko Muzimampati, if you can just, in a snapshot through the chair, highlight what are those. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Allow me to just raise one, which is related to people with disabilities. If the person who taught me how to read figures was a good teacher, on this report, you are referring there on page 80 to two categories of people. And I'm not worried about the racial specification of white female. But just to say, if you look at white female, you talk about number of employees, 14. If you're talking about employees with disability, you talk about 28. But then if you go to the last column and you look at the costs of employment, for the 14 people, the cost is 206. For the 28 people, the cost is 233. Now, I'm assuming that is correct. And I think that you will agree with me, Deputy Minister, that we need to look at equal compensation for people with disabilities with necessary affirmative sensitivities to that. I was looking at the young men from Soweto on television the other day talking about how he does not want handouts. Here, a person who's been injured in an accident, sat in a wheelchair for all his life. He says, I want to be treated equal. But I'm as a differently abled person, also saying that the costs for disabled people are very often different from the costs for able-bodied people, and therefore want to see us paying them. I see the heads are shaking. I'm not going to finish the sentence. Please, let's give over to you. Let's see, DJ and Honourable Deputy Minister, if we can deal with the responses within 10 minutes so that we finish by 10 past now. Thank you very much.
Well, Sir, we on this issue of halal tourism, there is a lot of work that we do on that. The minister was in Saudi Arabia, and Henry E. Trade also interacted with the minister. There is better connectivity now within that particular state, and we believe that there is a lot more for us because of the way South Africa is. South Africa is receptive to halal tourism, if I want to put it that way. Starting with the dress code, because these are some of the issues that are actually raised in other places. Starting with the dress code, coming to the food, coming to the reader's rights that South Africa provides. So it's a ready environment. It's a question of the interventions and so on and so forth. If I may, the Deputy Minister will also be traveling to that part of the world where it is. And this is an area that we are seriously looking into. Some of the halal tourists, particularly the ones that come from the UAE, they can come here for 2 months. And they spend a lot of money. So when they go for holiday, they really go for holiday. When we look at the different times, it's extremely hot within the Middle East. That is the period where we actually have our winter. And that's the period that most of those tourists actually want to come down to the south to cool off and so on and so forth. So indeed, it is an area that we actually sit on rather. The other question, the issues we have taken note, the issues with regard to people with disability, we have taken note of that. Suffice to say that in the current top management, we do have the issue with physical disability. We've got a couple of directors that are in that category. So it's spread, but
certain penetration usually because they are coming into employment. These are people that were disenfranchised. They are coming into employment now. And they will mostly start from the beginning, which is why we won't find as many. We have designated particular posts and resources to be able to provide for them, because it's actually some of the equipment and so on to create that conducive environment. The cost is higher, much higher. But we do have a resistance in place to provide for that. I'm gonna leave the rest of the questions to Member Rungu in terms of the issues around what are we doing in town and what are we doing in and the clients.
Thank you. I'll start first by giving a broad scenario in terms of what are we doing in terms of capacity building. It's not a capacity building where we come up with readily made issues for the targeted group. Instead, you go in and sit down with them to find out from them what are the areas that they would like to be, or what kind of information would they like to be capacitated on. And in this grouping, we find that we have the product owners, we have municipal officials, we have traditional leaders, and they will guide us to say, these are the things that we'd like to do. So the planning is informed by the targeted area or people within that area. What are the things that they would like to do? Our expected result basically is enhanced collaboration among the municipalities, product owners, as well as the other members like traditional leaders in terms of getting information on tourism for best practices. At the same time, we are looking forward that municipalities also being mandated to deal with tourism. They should be able to, within their planning spaces, to make sure that they deal with it in a very strategic fashion, which means would mean provision of the basic services serve as a key point to make sure that tourism thrives within their spaces. Greater awareness in terms of that will be able to make sure that opportunities that are coming within that municipality, they are seized by the people who are residing there. The issue of taking or making people visit or understand that they can walk to a park within their municipality is something that we still need to really work hard on it before they can even go to Sun City. I think they need to start first with what is within their space. Yes. But what we found as we studied,
the establishment is Sun One, the old Formula One.
I was saying in 2012 we did a study because we had to come up with for social tourism, what is it that you can do? We have people who have never traveled, but they don't have the income to do so. And what came out of the study, the first thing was where we engaged the software. That the software people, they save money, come December, they want to go and really relax. And the first thing that came was, we don't know where to go. So currently what we are doing through that program is to engage, some part is also part, and that has to say, what are those establishments that you have? When we can come up with a booklet and just give information for these people to know. If I go to Kruger Park, there are areas where one can afford to stay in Kruger Park. But some of us, we think it's mainly for the international people. So we are currently working on that booklet to be able to share it. So information is very crucial. People to be able to know where to go. Maybe that young man didn't even know that the provincial parks as well, just like some parks, come September, 1 week, they open them for free for people to be able to go and visit. But it simply says we have a lot to do from our side in terms of giving information.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If I may, as part of rounding off, thank the honorable members for the constructive inputs and questions. Some of them will be taken as work to further improve on what we have to do, and also as we are busy shaping up our strategy moving forward. Will work and especially on some of the aspects like halal tourism as we are continuously working. I just wanted to say, to add on what Jim Rungo was saying on responding to the National Tourism Careers Expo on the long-term kind of benefits that we already see in them, that we have more schools now that are offering tourism through the awareness that has been created over the years on this National Tourism Careers Expo. And it did not end up there. We also had to get into the actual curriculum, because the issue that we had before we started the NTCE was the fact that we had a lot of unemployed graduates who had certificates, and the industry was complaining that what has gone into their studies at the higher education institutions was not what they required for a young person to get into the employer. So we had to get in both at tertiary level, and then also get partnership with UMALUS to begin to look into the adult curriculum. So that study, the report already that has been done with UMALUS and SATSIDA and the National Department, I think, can be availed for members. We are looking forward to that report forming part of the next curriculum review, so that as a subject, it begins to have the kind of value, and at the same time, it can also afford our young people entry status when they get to university. So that would be some long-term end already what we have worked on up to now. But also provinces, through this very same awareness, now have their smaller Nyana tourism careers expo to afford a sizable number of young people. Because in terms of participation, when it is hosted by a particular province, it is that particular province that gives the benefit of more of its young learners participating, because others have to commute, there are other costs that are involved. So provinces remain now having their provincial one, and then it culminates into the national one. So that now is something that makes it to have those long-term impact. We also have the industry, increasingly participating, because they also do exhibitions, also pin them down, also indicate if they have opportunities on the spot at the National Tourism Council, so that you reach to the unemployed ones to make applications or to be in the database, so that they become the pool from which you take them for these skills development programs. So I just wanted to add on to it, and to further add to say the industry itself now, find it as that, but to also find it to align their program to our national tourism strategy. So now your FEDASA is able to align to say, okay, in terms of our competition, we have this 1 million beds. We will be targeting these very same groups that we have targeted, and then work around a similar program. So there is some coming together, gelling and alignment in terms of the broader strategy of what we have put through this kind of awareness platform that we have created. The other thing is which would link with the local tourism aspect is our progress in terms of working with local government and the partnership that we have with SALGA makes it that local government then comes to the party in terms of what we are doing. Because I'm a chair with the number of municipalities that we have. We are unable to reach to all of them, but through that partnership, we are able to talk to them at that broader platform to make sure the municipalities understand what Didi Murungu was saying. There is some commitment that they need to come to the party onto, as we then move on to support them, whether it is on capacity building, whether it is on infrastructure projects, because these projects also have an administrative level. So there are some commitments that municipalities need to do. There is commitment that they also need to do in terms of budget, and also having officials that we can capacity to drive this tourism. So we are working on that. And we also have that gathering every 2 years with municipalities to look into the progress. We've done it for 2 times now. So it continues to have less of a platform. If I may also say, Chair, I think from what Honorable Faber was saying earlier on around the international tourism, I think it is quite a positive development that tourism, specifically out of the resolution, the cabinet resolution, it is given an opportunity that in those markets where some of our big markets in terms of tourism, we'll be able to identify even the tour operators, key tour operators, that would then be able to assist our services come into the country, so that would make it easy for them to travel into the country. So that for us is something very positive that we think is going to take us tomorrow. Without taking much of the time, I think I just want to say, in terms of collaboration with the institutions of higher learning, we are also working with the National Department of Higher Education to ensure that the skills that we offer, our young people are also able to benefit into the national space in terms of them entering into universities. Others have opportunities now of also entering into the university. The graduations of tourism bodies, they are two fronts. They are getting two different certificates depending on what they did. Others are on accommodation, others are on beverages. Those have got entry points for university level for those who want to get at university, whilst others are getting opportunities for being employed. Others are also encouraged to be entrepreneurs on their own. So we then want to find them into the mainstream as well in terms of educational development, so they participate now and benefit out of your next buses and every buffering season from the department. I think this issue of beneficiation by our small producers and all that, it's what the whole government is grappling with. Because you get a situation where some of the tourists who would go down to our rural areas, they would buy a lot of these artifacts and then they go and sell them internationally, because they have not enough system to really place some of those. So it's something that DTI is working on with ourselves, and taking much more interest from the question that the honorable members are asking. But I think it's quite bigger than just confining them, because most of our original stuff gets stolen somewhere and you find them elsewhere all over the world. I think we have covered on the issues of making sure tourism is affordable. I also hope honorable members, when SAT presents its annual report, will also reflect on how far the domestic tourism strategy implementation is working, getting the issues of affordability and attractions, and the fact that our people need to benefit or need to actually reach or access some what form of strategies are they doing. I think that they will be able to explain that. But thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. You started us and you ended us very well. I see my colleagues beginning to give me signs there that we are under pressure. Can we ask you to just hold with us for 2 minutes? We want to thank you very much for your time and the effort that you put into the presentation. I want you to also know that when we voted on your budget last year, everybody in the House without question felt that this is an important department of government, and therefore we are not only wishing you well, but also assuring you of our ongoing support should it be that you require that from us. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, Honourable Kwasa, the new DG. I was in doubt at the beginning of the meeting whether I should call you acting, because in this report you are still acting. But we congratulate you and thank the members of the team for the great work that you're doing. We are very happy with the report you provided to us. Honourable members, two things. One is the minutes of the last meeting. We've had myself, Honourable Mita Mtimunya, Honourable Faber, Honourable Lond, Van Lingen, and Honourable Valda in the meeting. You didn't put Honourable Valda's initials, per se. We also have no other changes to that minute. It was when we had the presentation from the Department of Trade and Industry on, if I have it right, on SACO Summit. Can we get a proposal for the acceptance of that minute? Honourable Timunia, seconded by? Seconded by? Honourable Mita, thank you very much. Yes, you were there. The second, just one announcement, two announcements. The one is an announcement that I made yesterday about the oversight reports. You have until next Wednesday to give feedback, otherwise the reports will go through. The final announcement is just to say that we are looking at the SACO matter that we dealt with there, having that presented to the House by next week Tuesday. Thank you very much, members, for your attendance. We'll see you in January later in the day.
Oh, this one.